Hey guys, I'm Garrett.
And I'm Melissa.
We've been married for over 10 years and have two kids, Caleb and Sadie.
Over the last few years, we have fallen in love with the scriptures, how through them God has made himself known to us, and his ultimate desire to dwell among us.
We want to invite you to join us on this journey as God reveals himself to us through his word.
We also want to be real about our lives, our struggles, and our joys.
This is Growing Deeper.
So sorry about missing last week. I had a terrible migraine, and so it was on me that we missed podcasting. I had to give myself some grace and go, you know what? It's okay if you miss.
Yeah.
Sometimes we just didn't want it to become a thing where 6 months later we still hadn't podcast. So we're back.
Yeah.
And we're good. It's funny because I think I had posted on our Instagram about how a picture of Maggie, our dog, jumping up, and Garrett's like her paws like on the computer.
Yeah.
Or on the podcasting table is kind of like one of the reasons that podcasting can be so hard.
Yeah.
For us.
Yeah. And there are a number of them.
There are a number of them. And I'll give you another example from tonight. So we had recorded about 3 or 4 minutes of this podcast. And then I hear Sadie yell down for, because you remember, we always do this after they go to, air quote, go to bed.
Right.
After we've put them to bed. And we're podcasting and I'm in the middle of great storytelling, as usual. And you know, I hear Sadie yell, hey, mom. It's never dad. It's always mom.
It is.
And so I answered her and she said she needed to tinkle. And I said, okay. Great, go tinkle. And she said, I already did. And I was like,
I just wanted you to know that I already tinkled.
I said, okay, great. Then go to bed.
Yeah.
And she said, okay. And then she said, I'm going to get a sticker. And so we have this sticker chart for her not having accidents in her bed. And so I guess she's self-proclaimed that she's made it through
she's
the
gonna
night.
Make it.
She's going to make it tonight. So yeah, I mean, that's just the kind of, the struggle is real and it sometimes it's hard to bounce back from that and go, oh my goodness, what should we do? Should we just cut this? Like, I don't know. So we decided to just, we were only 3 minutes in, we just start over. If it happens again, then we are going to cut the podcast. We're going to have to do some editing work. But yeah, just things happen that get in your way. And, it honestly kind of makes me think of this, of what we've read where Jesus was interrupted.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
you just got to roll with
you
it.
You just kind of got to roll with it and accept that things are, there's other important things
going
on.
We're not
too.
Exactly like, you know, having our, you know, our life is, you know, where we can take the day and like spend an hour podcasting in a special podcasting room or something like
where
that.
Somebody has our kids and,
yeah.
there's and our dog and there's no distractions
right,
at all. We
right.
just, we don't have.
So we got to roll with it.
We don't have that. You just roll with it and you say, wow, that was really funny and cute. And like you just kind of want to wrap up that little voice of hers.
Yeah.
But then also you're like, go to bed.
Yeah.
So anyway, I will just have that instead of the original.
You're going to leave them in suspense of what the original
you
one
will,
was.
The hidden the hidden podcasting.
But I will say we have a 7-year-old now. So like
that
happened last week. We had that Caleb turned 7 and or I guess a couple of days ago, really.
Yesterday.
Sorry.
It's just his birthday has basically been spread out. It's ridiculous, you guys. I mean, he had his birthday party on Saturday at a jump park. And then, like Tuesday, one of our neighbors gave him a gift, which was awesome, by the way. It was a magic set. So he's like amped about
doing
these
magic tricks. Yeah.
And then on his actual birthday, he had grandparents come over and bring another cake. And that was awesome. And he got to open more presents. And then tomorrow, we're going to my parents' house to celebrate his birthday. And he's going to get to blow out another candle for like, I think he picked cupcakes.
That's lame.
Yeah. Well, I know. You would think.
You should consult me before you have him pick his dessert.
Well, he just wanted something that could have Pokemon on it.
Oh, okay.
And so,
yeah.
Cupcakes
so,
are the
but
way
it's,
to go.
It's kind of crazy, you know, having a 7-year-old, you know, that really has flown by pretty quick.
You know,
I mean, I still remember bouncing him outside of, you know, like church walking out of church and bouncing until he fell asleep, you know, and so like that just feels like it was a minute ago. So
yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's cool to reflect on that, and also kind of sad and happy and all those things all at the same time.
I don't feel like I'm old enough to be able to have a 7-year-old in some way.
Yeah.
Like, how could it be possible that
I'm still, at 24 right now.
Mentally?
No.
But not in your back. not
in my back. Yeah. No. But, yeah. All right. So we'll transition into our study for Matthew this week. I kind of want to... I guess I'll just do it in the middle. I was thinking about starting in a little bit different way, but just for reflection on where we've been, we've had all these different healing narratives that Jesus has gone about and done all throughout the Galilee, and really last podcast ended with kind of these different reactions to Jesus, and you start to see that there's more tension that's building. As we go here, where the reactions to Jesus are very, like, they feel kind of polarized in a lot of ways. And some people are kind of like unsure. It's like, whoa, you know, holy moly, who could do such things? You know, like nobody's ever done this in Israel before. And the magnitude of which he's healing people is on a scale that hasn't been known before. There's certainly things that are happening that have happened before, even like raising the dead. That happens with, Elijah and Elisha. But nobody on this scale has ever done healings. And Jesus has demonstrated his power over all things at this point. And, you're kind of left with the question of like, who is this guy? For some people, they recognize him as the Messiah. They start to see that. These blind men are the first people to really acknowledge it and see it in him that he is the Messiah. So we kind of saw that last podcast. And then some people are, like I said, astonished by what's happening. But then some people, like the Pharisees and the scribes, you can start feeling the tension with them to the point that they see these such good things and they ascribe it to him being, by the ruler of demons, he expels demons. It seems like they go in a totally different direction than anybody would expect. But you start to realize that he's starting to create a lot of tension among the people. And so that's going to continue building. But that's where we have ended in chapter 9. And we're going to pick up the very end of chapter 9. I felt like this fit nicely with the beginning of chapter 10 more than it did above, but it does all kind of flow together. So anyway, so we'll pick up here at the end at verse 35 of chapter 9.
Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field."
All right. So it just kind of summarizes, Matthew summarizes basically what Jesus is going to continue doing. And he makes a point, really, that this is he's made a selection of healing narratives, because he could, I guess, go into more, but he says that, look, from here on, he went throughout all the towns and villages, teaching in synagogues, and the key here, the thing that he continues doing and everything that this revolves around is the good news of the kingdom. It's what he was proclaiming before that, that the kingdom of heaven is at hand. It's drawn near. It's right here in front of us. It's God's rule and reign is here now. And it's in him and his message and what he's doing. And kind of combined with that is he's also healing diseases, sicknesses. He's showing that God's rule and reign is coming down. And this is the way that he's showing that happening. It's almost proof of his message. So anyways, those are tied together. He doesn't just proclaim good news. He actually does you know, he does things that backs that up, and also just shows, you know, God's desire to, you know, move into his creation and starts, you know, he basically healing his creation. So, mm-hmm. So your thoughts on this?
So my initial thoughts on this, like, especially the first two verses, I just have this image of these really like sad eyes, like yeah. that are kind of looking out onto the world that are just like, I don't know if you've ever seen somebody with like really tired eyes that they just mm-hmm. look like worn out from, maybe I see it in myself of
or
like
are you looking early, at them right now?
I look in the mirror and no, but I mean, really just kind of someone who is going through a lot and it just like sees how broken a situation is and can't do anything. Well, Jesus can do something about it, but you know, there's nothing that it feels so hopeless and sad. And that's kind of how I see Jesus is like viewing this, like looking out among the people and seeing this brokenness, seeing all these diseases and that he ultimately heals. But, you know, it says that he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless. And I'm just thinking about just how sad he is about that.
Yeah.
And of course the compassion word made me think about how Exodus describes Yahweh himself. And so, you know, the gracious and compassionate. And so I'm like kind of seeing that lived out here, that compassion being lived out through Jesus here. But ultimately just recognizing that Jesus hurt, seeing the hurt.
Yeah.
And that's what I sense and that's what I feel here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, certainly, I mean, you can feel it. Yeah. You can just feel it in his eyes that you can't see.
Yeah.
But it's so in line with the heart of Yahweh and what he's like mm-hmm. whenever he looks at his people, you know, like the Exodus, you know, he hears the cry of his people and he responds to them. You know, he feels for them and he understands it. So this is actually, I'll just start out with this of like, so the crowds have been like building and building and building. And this is like the sixth time since he came down off the Sermon on the Mount that the crowds are talked about. So you've just got all these people that are coming. And it's like, it's just like with the tax collectors that we talked about earlier, it's like they've been longing for something,
mm-hmm.
you know, they've been longing to be cared for. And so this idea of, you know, he had compassion for them. R.T. France makes this note. He says, it's more than just the feeling, but he says, he translates it as his heart went out to them. This word speaks of a warm, compassionate response to need. No single English term does justice to it. Compassion, pity, sympathy, and fellow feeling all convey part of it. But, quote, his heart went out perhaps represents more fully the emotional force of the underlying metaphor of a gut response. In each case of its use for Jesus and Matthew, there is not only sympathy with a person's need, but also a practical response to meet that need. Emotion results in caring and effective action. It's a verb which describes the Jesus of the gospel stories in a nutshell. So it's like he has this desire, not only feels for them, but he desires to act on their behalf, you know, and do something about it. Not just something, a feeling, it's an emotion that moves to action,
mm-hmm.
which is what Yahweh does. That's how he acts and how he behaves. One thing I just note whenever I go through this, the thing that really sticks out immediately is that they're weary. I don't know. I think I'm going to take this real quick, just to personal aspect for me. When he looks at them, and he sees that they're weary and dejected, literally, you know, they're exhausted, you know, and they feel they're thrown away. They've been discarded by their people or by their leaders. And this is actually a common theme throughout all of scripture. I'll just give an example. Ezekiel 34. Ezekiel 34 is a, the whole thing is an indictment or indictment against, against Israel. And Yahweh says this to his people. He says, "Woe to the shepherds of Israel who were feeding themselves. Must not the shepherds feed the flock? The fat you eat and you clothe yourself with the wool." So you take all the good stuff, you know, and you clothe yourself with your sheep's wool. And the well-nourished animals you slaughter, but you do not feed the flock. The weak you have not strengthened, the sick you have not healed, and with respect to the hurt, you have not bound them up. That's a theme, right, of what we've been reading with Jesus, of him healing his people and binding them up. Mm-hmm. You know, the broken, bringing back the broken. And his indictment in Ezekiel 34 is that these shepherds, the people that he's put over his people, the leaders of Israel, haven't cared for them. They haven't cared for the sick. And he's like, this is what I called you to do. Instead, you've been ruthless, you know, but rather you've ruled over them with force and with ruthlessness. He goes on to say, "My flock were scattered, and there was no one seeking them, and there was no one searching for them." You know, they were gone, and nobody even cared. You know, like that's kind of what the idea behind this is. And Yahweh goes on to say, "Look, I am against the shepherds, and I will seek the flock from their hand, and I will put an end to them from shepherding flocks, and the shepherds will no longer feed themselves, and I will deliver my flocks from their mouths, they will eat, or they will not be as food for them." And he goes on later to say, the whole chapter is really, really awesome. But he goes on to say, verse 15, "I myself will feed my flock. I myself will allow them to lie down, declares the Lord Yahweh. I will seek the lost, and I will bring back the scattered, and I will bind up the one that is hurt, and I will strengthen the sick, and the fat and the strong I will destroy. I will feed her with justice." And then later in verse 23, he says, "I will set up over them one shepherd, and he will feed them. That is my servant David. He will feed them, and he will be for them as a shepherd." And then in verse 25, he says, "And I will make them a covenant of peace." And so this language of them being weary and dejected, like sheep not having a shepherd. They don't have anybody guiding them. This is common language to the Old Testament or to the First Testament, in that the leaders of Israel haven't cared for them as they were supposed to. And so now they're lost and they don't know what to do. And he feels that the way that Yahweh felt that and feels that for his people. And for me to kind of move that to a personal level, we talk about, we want to be real about our lives, our struggles and our joys. And so for me, like I have been one that has felt weary and dejected, and often not knowing, you know, who is leading me, you know, and like who, like I feel, you know, I don't really know what I'm supposed to do sometimes. And I feel lost a lot. Like I feel like I try to do the right thing and I try to do the next right thing. And, you know, and then often it doesn't seem to work out for me, you know? And so I just end up feeling lost, not cared for, those things. And I'm not saying within my family, you know, it just is, you know, I don't know, from a leadership, often in the church, you know, it's like, just don't know what, look, you're looking for some guidance and some care sometimes, mm-hmm. and you don't know where to get it. And I don't know, I read this and I feel that.
Yeah.
I really feel that. And at the same time, I look at this and I know, just like what with Yahweh, he says, "I will be their shepherd." Basically, I'm going to come and care for them. And I know that Jesus is ultimately my shepherd.
Yeah.
But sometimes there's like, you're looking for like, you desire this like personal touch to it, and you're, I don't know. I'm kind of seeking that, you know?
Yeah.
And, so anyways, this really rings true with me right now of this feeling of weary and dejected, you know, yeah. just tired. Like, I'm just so tired all the time and not knowing what to do next.
Well, and to go along with that and kind of thinking about sort of a flip side of that, of just Jesus knowing that he has come to be the shepherd, mm-hmm. right? He knows he has come to be the shepherd. And so I wanted to jump over actually to John chapter 10 and actually just read some of Jesus's words about this. So 10 verse 11, John, he says, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep." And there's more that goes on with that, but I was just like a couple of takeaways I kind of had about thinking about how Jesus, with these sad eyes that I'm envisioning, where I can't even know what Jesus' face looks like. I'm picturing, I guess, different actors mm-hmm. playing Jesus and seeing these sad eyes and knowing that he sees himself as their shepherd. And so what does that really mean? It means he would give his life for his sheep. It means he knows his sheep intimately and the sheep know him. Mm-hmm. So it's this two-way relationship. And he doesn't run away when trouble comes yeah. like somebody else would who doesn't care about the sheep. He yeah. is the shepherd and he is not going to run away when that trouble comes. And I think we're going to kind of see that playing out and how he's telling as we get into chapter 10 and he's telling his disciples about things they're going to encounter. I think that they have to remember that he is their shepherd and what that means.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of times, you know, since we don't have like that farming, we don't often think about the role of a shepherd and what they would do for their sheep.
Yeah.
And how important the sheep are to them. And so that's kind of like an interesting metaphor to kind of really dig into and think about how Jesus reviews that responsibility or that
yeah.
role.
Yeah. And so, with this compassion that he has for them, what he ends up saying, he says to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful." So he's looking out among the people about mm-hmm. of this crowd. He's like, "Look, people are desiring mm-hmm. to be fed. You know, they're desiring to, you know, to be led and cared for. The harvest is plentiful, but there's so few workers." Mm-hmm. And up to this point, he is the only worker, you know, that's an understatement for sure that there's so few workers. And then he says to them, "Therefore ask the Lord of the harvest that he send out workers into the harvest." And one thing to note with that, so he tells them to pray basically for workers, right? For people that can come and care, reap this harvest of people that are desiring, you know, to be cared for.
Yeah, actually do the work.
Yeah. And so the disciples are called to pray for that. And so that we'll follow that into the next one. But another thing to note with the harvest, I mean, one note that I had in a commentary was that, you know, with the harvest, there's a sense of urgency with it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's here, it's ready. Like, you can't let the harvest just sit there. You know, you got to go do something about the harvest. Otherwise, it's wasted.
Mm-hmm.
Farmer can't just sit and stare at the crop. He has to be active and diligent to reap the harvest when the time comes. And so he sees these people that are there ready to receive his word and his care. And he tells them to pray for those that will come and help with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that naturally flows into the next one. The next part of this, and it says, "In summoning his 12 disciples, he gave them authority over unclean spirits so that they could expel them and they could heal every disease and every sickness. Now, these are the names of the 12 apostles. First, Simon, who's called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew, the tax collector, James, the son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the Zealot, and Judas Iscariot, the one who betrayed him. Jesus sent out the 12, instructed them, and saying, "Do not go on the road to the Gentiles, and do not enter into a city of the Samaritans, but go instead to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And as you are going, preach, saying, 'The kingdom of heaven has drawn near.' Heal those who are sick, raise the dead, cleanse lepers, expel demons. Freely you have received, so freely give. Do not procure gold or silver or copper for your belts. Do not take a traveler's bag for the road, or two tunics or sandals or a staff, for the worker is deserving of his provisions. And in whatever town or village you enter, inquire who in it is worthy, and stay there until you depart. And when you enter into the house, greet it. And if the house is worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it is not worthy, let your peace return to you. And whoever does not welcome you or listen to your words, shake the dust from your feet as you are going out from that house or that town. Truly, I say to you, it will be more bearable for the region of Sodom and Gomorrah on the day of judgment than for that town."
What a positive note to end on in that section, right? Yeah. No, but really, kind of going back, my first thoughts on this are like, wow, it is just like Matthew to be like, "Here, let's list some names at the beginning."
Sure.
But also, the other thing I thought was how he mentions Judas who betrayed him. And I'm like, spoiler alert. Yeah. Like, there's like, what do you mean?
Well, clearly this is written to people that kind of have an idea what happened.
Right. Yeah. But I kind of thought that was funny. Because if you were reading through this for the first, like, truly no one, somebody who did not know anything.
Yeah.
You're to like, read, what do you mean? Who betrayed who?
Yeah.
But generally, I will say out of the first, four verses, I guess, with the names and everything, the thing that stuck out to me the most was about giving the disciples the authority to drive out demons and healing disease and sickness. Mm-hmm. And I was just trying to think about, like, I don't know. I mean, it's such an interesting thing to think about Jesus kind of, I don't know if this is the right word, but like sharing power in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he knew what the ultimate, it shows a sense of humility to me, but also knowing that ultimately this is going to all point back to him anyway. And like giving in what we've been talking about with like authority to Jesus.
Yeah.
And that it's ultimately going to point back to him. But I mean, I don't know. Like, I think that there would be some seed of doubt in your mind of like, well, if these other people are doing this too, like, I don't know. Yeah. There's just a little bit of a humility.
So the thing to me I had something similar to that. But to me, it goes back to Genesis 1 and 2,
mm-hmm.
where, God creates humanity, right? He creates them in his image. But he sets them up basically as partners, as divine partners, but sets them up as partners. And he commissions them to basically extend his rule and reign.
Mm-hmm.
So they're his, vice regents, they aren't God. I want to make sure I correct myself from earlier. They aren't divine, but they're in his image.
Yeah.
And so he's sharing his authority and power with them. And it's such an unusual thing for you to think a God to do.
Right.
And so that's very...
I mean, you think of like a dictator, somebody with a bunch of power as wanting to hoard that power and not chance somebody else getting credit for it.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I know ultimately he just knew that that was all going to point to like back to God.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. I think that there would be some sort of the human part that's just like very concerned or, I don't know. Yeah.
And he doesn't seem to be.
Doesn't seem to be at all. No.
And so, maybe something that gets passed over is that there's 12 of them, right? So this is a mm-hmm. recommissioning of Israel, a reestablishment mm-hmm. of Israel as, they're representative of all of Israel, basically, and him handing over, his authority to them or giving them authority like he has had this whole time. It's, but basically his, what they're going to do is an extension of his ministry. He's going to do all the things that they're going to do all the things that he was already doing. So they're extending his ministry here and are going to be going out. So one thing I want to point out is that, so before it, he tells them to pray basically for the, you know, to the Lord of the harvest to send out workers. And then what ends up happening is that those people that he calls to pray for it become the workers.
Right.
Right. So it's like a, don't pray for it and then just sit and wait. It's pray for it and then be the means through which that happens. He calls them to be that. And so these 12 disciples are the means of which he's going to show compassion to all the people that he was addressing before or talking about before. They're lost and dejected. So they're his answer.
Yeah. You know? And I think it goes to show his concern more for like the mission of God is so important that he, you know, this is like a more efficient way.
Yeah. Well, know, but it's in alignment with all the things that have happened before. So remember whenever Moses was leading Israel, they get, near Mount Sinai, and his father-in-law Jethro comes to him, and he says, "Look, dude, this is too much.
You
for
can't
you.
Be the only one."
Yeah, and not that this is too much for Jesus, but at the same time, the wisdom of it was you need to assign people to delegate this stuff, and like they can teach Israel. Like you don't have to be the only one. You know, like Moses teach these guys, and then they can teach others. And so that's sort of kind of what's happening. This is a pattern. That goes back even to the Exodus. So it makes sense. It's in alignment with even Israel's beginning story and narrative. Yeah. And so he does the same thing. And it's the list of the 12. I mean, I think most people know the list of the 12. You know, one thing that probably gets highlighted a lot is Matthew, the tax collector, and Simon, the zealot. You know, we don't know for sure that Simon was, so the zealot could be that he was later, I guess, in the time of writing Matthew, the zealots were known for being a rebel group against Rome and were highly, they were basically assassins, you know, that would try to take out Rome, you know, one at a time, basically. Mm-hmm. But at the time, you know, like maybe at Jesus's time, that wasn't necessarily, it could just mean the zealous one. Like he was very zealous, like he cared a lot. He was very passionate.
Yeah.
It could be that. So, but either way, Matthew being among this group is actually pretty, striking, just because for him to be one of the 12, as a former tax collector would, just as the former narratives show, like that would have been striking to anybody. That a tax collector would be a part of this reestablishment of Israel, you know, this tight group around Jesus.
Yeah.
So you got any more?
Well, just kind of moving into this idea of only going to the Jews. That's like his first instruction is like avoiding Gentiles and.
Well, so I think I want to make sure it's clear. Don't go the way of the Gentiles. So he's telling them don't go into the Decapolis. Mm-hmm. Like don't go north, northeast of the Galilee. And also don't go basically down to Samaria, which would be south, southwest of where they are. Don't go to Samaria. He's basically limiting the area, not the people. Mm. But the focus is certainly on the lost sheep of Israel. Yeah. But he's not saying don't talk to Gentiles, but he's limiting to the Galilee.
Right.
He's telling them to stay in the Galilee, and this is where you're going to be.
Well, I was thinking of some reasons that he might would, you know, suggest that, you know. And I was thinking, initially I was like, maybe not rocking the boat too much and speaking to people who you know the majority of the people, you know, their traditions, you know, their like you kind sure. of, you're going to know more of how they're thinking and kind of like taking baby steps. Mm-hmm. And I also thought of how this might be, since this is the first time he's like sending them out on their own, that this needs to be in some ways kind of like a confidence builder mission. Sure. And it kind of made me think of, so Sadie had a dentist appointment this week and it was like her first real cleaning or whatever. And so, you know, their motto at the dentist that we go to is like, you know, we're just going to do what we can. If we can't do everything, that's fine. We're just trying to get out
we're
of this.
We're not going to terrorize her.
Right. We're not going
to
be like,
make her never want to come back.
We
to
make
this.
Sure we get the fluoride on every tooth. She's not going to leave here without that. Or, you know, we're going to get every x-ray or whatever. It's like, no, let's build her confidence. Let this be, not that they're going to have a great time on this. Not that these are equal, but I'm saying the whole, like one of the goals of that appointment was not cleaning her teeth. One of the goals of that appointment was building her confidence at the dentist's office and knowing that this isn't a place that's like loud and scary,
right?
You know? And so I kind of wonder if like being with people that would have maybe similar backgrounds to them would be kind of like a baby step, build your confidence because you're going to be dealing with a lot of conflict down the road, which he's going to describe, later.
Yeah. It could be, and it may just be that it's going to be like it was before for him, where you're going to have some people that are astonished, some people that, you know, that buy into it. And then some people that are just like you're all demon possessed.
Right.
You know? And so that, I think that's going to continue to be the way that they're reacted to among Israel. This is certainly a preparation for what will come later.
Right.
And he's basically, you know, given them a trial run, for it. Cause it will be, you know, going out is going to be a theme of Matthew, and he'll end with that basically.
Yeah.
So, again, it is to the, he calls them the lost sheep of the house of Israel, which we've kind of gone over the metaphor, there. And again, the thing is, tell them the kingdom of heaven has come near. It's at hand. That's what they're supposed to proclaim. He, you know, the little line of like, hey, you freely received, freely give. Like, don't hold for yourself the things that I have freely given you. That would make no sense. Do what has been done to you.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that he tells them to do, whenever they go, is like, basically don't take extra stuff. It's not saying you can't take a tunic, but like basically don't procure extra stuff, for this journey. He wants them basically to go with the bare minimum. And this is, you know, for me, this would demonstrate, you know, like really highly trusting in God, in highlighting, this isn't about gaining wealth or status.
Yeah. That was a big thing to me. It's like doing this with humility and recognizing that none of this is supposed to be for personal gain.
Yeah.
Like that was a big thing I was sensing in
this. This is for the sake of the sheep,
right?
Not for them. And so they're going out for the sheep. They're not to build wealth based off of this. You go into some towns and they're going to receive you, and some they won't. With that, for me, it recalls the Sermon on the Mount with don't throw your pearls to pigs. We talked about it at the time, like it felt weird to say it of discrimination and discriminating, which doesn't mean like reject somebody based off their race or color or whatever.
Right.
Just saying like use discretion. And if you're talking to somebody and they're clearly just like, they don't want any part of it, move on. You know, stop trying to sell them something they don't want, you know, it's just as, don't throw your pearls to pigs.
Yeah.
You know, if they're not going to appreciate it, then move on.
So there's this workout program that I used to do called P90X.
Yeah.
And the guy, Tony, on it, the trainer, who was totally annoying, but he always had these little sayings that kind of like caught my attention. And one of them was, do your best and forget the rest.
Right.
And that's kind of what I was thinking about this is like, you've done what Jesus has asked you to do, which is to go and share that the kingdom of heaven is near. Like you've done that, and you can't worry about whether or not they're accepting it.
Go to people that want that,
you know,
as opposed to those that are continuing to reject it. And and to me, this actually has distinct echoes back to it kind of highlights it there at the end of it. It has distinct echoes back to the Sodom and Gomorrah story. So mm-hmm. what ends up happening, so you have two scenes. So Sodom and Gomorrah is really well known, where there's these messengers or angels that go down to Sodom. Right. And then judgment is poured out on Sodom and Gomorrah. But right before that, there's a story of Abraham. And I think it's the tree of Mamre is what that one is. But anyways, the three messengers are passing by and he says, wait, don't pass by here without having dinner with us. And Abraham shows hospitality to the messengers.
Mm-hmm.
That's where God basically takes him into his confidence. And, Abraham's like, does this really need to happen to Sodom and Gomorrah? What if there were, 60 righteous people? Would you save it? Yes. What about 50? Yes, I would save it. It's not a bargain. It's just it's showing how forgiving really God really is, and really, and also how bad Sodom and Gomorrah are in that mm-hmm. story. But the issue is, the large overarching issue of both of them is hospitality and this acceptance of the message and acceptance of God. And so this rings really well with that, in that, look, some people are going to receive it. Some people are going to reject it. And those that reject it, they fall on their own sword.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what he tells them. And he tells them, look, if they don't take it, shake the dust off your feet and move on. You don't have to sit here and argue with them, incessantly. And that should be something that we should think about for ourselves. I mean, I know a lot of people that spend a lot of time arguing with people on social media, trying to convince them of something they don't want to be convinced of.
Yeah.
Why? Don't throw your pearls to pigs.
It is interesting, though, because it is like this idea of like a lost sheep and doing anything to get them back.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, there having to be a point where it's like,
yeah,
I can't, there's nothing I can do.
Yeah. The lost sheep, those are those that are longing for
God, yeah.
for the their
yeah,
shepherd.
Yeah.
That's true. And so the people that are being described here, they don't long for their shepherd.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the difference that's going on here. And so he's sending them out, and it's not going to be easy. You have any other thoughts on this section?
I think that covered it.
Okay. So we're going to continue on this sort of mission issue. So keep going.
Verse 16, I am sending you out like sheep among wolves. Therefore, be as shrewd as snakes and as innocent as doves. Be on your guard against men. They will hand you over to the local councils and flog you in their synagogues. On my account, you will be brought before governors and kings as witnesses to them and to the Gentiles. But when they arrest you, do not worry about what to say or how to say it. At that time, you will be given what to say, for it will not be you speaking, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. Brother will betray brother to death, and a father his child. Children will rebel against their parents and have them put to death. All men will hate you because of me, but he who stands firm to the end will be saved. When you are persecuted in one place, flee to another. I tell you the truth, you will not finish going through the cities of Israel before the Son of Man comes.
Okay. So if we haven't caught on to it, sheep is kind of a big deal. Yeah. You're like, I'm sending you like sheep.
Theme.
But sheep in the midst of wolves. And so sheep have this, they're just well known for being incredibly vulnerable. They don't really have any defense mechanism. And so he's saying, like, look, I'm sending you... you're going to be vulnerable in these places. I mean, he's sending them with nothing. It's not like they're taking weapons with them and they're, these big groups that can go through towns and, get in fights if they want to. That's not how he's sending them. He's sending them as vulnerable sheep. But they're not supposed to be stupid like sheep. So sheep have both a tendency to be vulnerable and also very stupid. And so, but he says, they're going to be vulnerable, but they're not to be stupid. They're supposed to be wise like serpents. And so serpents have this, since the beginning, have had this idea of like being smart and crafty. you know, and usually that's a negative thing, or it can be a negative thing. But smart and crafty, but instead of being using that for evil, you're supposed to be innocent like doves. And so Jesus uses like this three compound, like animal imagery, to show like what they're supposed to be like. Look, you're going to go into hard places, you know, being selective about like, how are you going to, you know, interact with these people? Be smart in how you talk about things, and always, you know, don't do anything that, can be taken at, you know, as wrong here. You know, don't hurt somebody, you know, be innocent. You're be innocent as doves, have nothing that they can throw against you. Mm. Basically. And so he kind of does this threefold thing. But even with that, even that being still, he warns them that, look, you're going to go into these places and they're going to flog you in the synagogues. And what's weird is that he mentions here of that they're going to be brought before governors and kings because of me. Well, there's no other governors and kings in Galilee. I think here, Jesus and Matthew are very much looking forward mm-hmm. to a time whenever Jesus isn't going to be among them. It's kind of hinting towards forward to that whenever they will go before governors and kings, and they're going to be persecuted. You know, Tiberius was well known for, killing Christians at will.
Yeah.
Having them become basically murdering them in the gladiator pit, you know, type deal. And so, he's kind of preparing them for that. That doesn't seem to be what's in the immediate future within the story, but is something that Matthew's looking long-term at, and looking at the audience that he's writing to.
Yeah. To me, it seems like if you remember in, I think it was chapter 8, that, there's kind of this first glance of like following Jesus is not going to always be easy of mm-hmm. this, like, okay, I want to follow you, but I need to go bury my father first. And he's, you know, has kind of like the harsh, like, let the dead bury their own kind of thing. And we were like, whoa, like, that's intense. Mm-hmm. and that was just like the little bit of taste of like, okay, following Jesus isn't all about just miracles and like a popular rabbi that's walking around and, you know, getting all these crowds and things are great. This is, to me, is like taking it a step further, and specifically for his disciples, of like, I want you to fully understand how hard this road is going to be.
Yeah.
And like, that's just kind of, I was like, this just like took it up.
Yeah. What has been this really shiny, like beautiful thing that's been going on. It's mm-hmm. like this, he casts this shadow over it.
Well, and I mean, even to start this chapter, they're thinking we're going to get to heal people too.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to get to cast out demons. Like, that seems...
We get to be a part of this. That we get to be a part cool. of the kingdom coming. Yeah. You know, that's really cool.
Yeah, that seems awesome. And then you kind of see, like, it's interesting to me that he did choose to be like, here's the good news. Yeah. Now here's the bad news.
Yeah.
Good, some bad.
You're like, you wouldn't believe it, but that's actually what's going to happen to you. Yeah. You know, you're going to be doing all these good things. You're going to be innocent as doves, and still they're going to beat you. And they're going to flog you. And why? Because of me. And he says specifically, because of my name. Like, their brothers are going to hate each other. You know, children and their parents are going to be, torn apart because of my name. And what that means is, like, my reputation is going to precede me here. And people are going to hear that you're about me, and it's going to cause division. And so he's warning them ahead of time, and that's exactly what's going to happen. You know, they're going to, you know, among these Jewish families, they're going to be torn apart. And you know, it's not going to be easy for anybody.
And I feel like you can already kind of sense that with like how the tension has been building and how you've had like some Pharisees from the the girl that died, that her father was, you know, worked in the synagogue. And so you kind of see that tension there of like somebody who works in the synagogue and who is, you know, running with the Pharisees, and how they've had a lot of, well, we know they've had a lot of tension with him because they're trying to be like, it is by the prince of demons who drives out demons. Like, there's all this tension there, and they're all Jews.
Yeah.
And there's already that tension there. And it's like, you can only see that as building going forward.
Yeah. And so, one thing that I noticed with this section, is a repetition of the Sermon on the Mount, right? So he says, whenever they hand you over, do not be anxious. How you're going to speak, what you should say, you know, because that's going to be given to you by your Heavenly Father, you know, like, the spirit of your Father who is speaking through you. That's like, so, where in the Sermon on the Mount, it was, don't be anxious for what you're going to wear, where you're going to, you know, what you're going to eat. Mm-hmm. Instead, know that your Father cares for you. And so just as, you know, God cares for, cares for every, you know, the lilies of the field type thing, you know, God cares for you. And so just the same here, you hear this, do not be anxious, that he's telling to his disciples again, that whenever that happens, you know, and it's not a license to like not be prepared. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a license to say like, oh, well, I just won't do anything because God will just tell me what to do, so that you just got like, get zapped into the Holy Spirit and then everything just starts coming out of you. That's not the example that we're given in Scripture. Like, for instance, whenever Stephen is being stoned, he recites the story of Israel to, right before that, he recites the whole story of Israel to their leaders. And, you know, I can't help but think that, like, a lot of that, like, that's been repeated through Ezra and Nehemiah, where they say, like, you know, we did all, you brought us out of the land of Egypt, and this happened, and we went away from you, and then we went into, you know, we did all this bad stuff, and then we went to exile, and, you know, so, like, it's the repetition of the history of Israel, like, that was on Stephen's heart, probably was something he grew up learning. And so there, in that moment, as he's proclaiming Jesus as Lord, all of the history of Israel is coming to him. And so it's kind of a blend of both, you know, where it's like what he grew up on, at the same time, Jesus and, you know, the Lord is using that, to proclaim his glory. And so anyways, so he tells them, don't be anxious about this stuff. You know, you're going to be given what you need when you need it, with that. And, you know, so you basically take heart with that. You have any other thoughts on this section?
I think I think you've pretty much covered, and I've kind of mentioned the few things that I had on this.
Yeah,
cause so, to me, it's a lot, it's all just one big theme of similar messages.
It is. I'll end with this. So he tells them, that you'll never finish going through the towns of Israel until the Son of Man comes. And so this can be a source of confusion.
Yeah.
Because we usually think of, well,
Jesus is the Son of Man and he's here.
Well, okay. So until the Son of Man comes, most commentators, whenever they read this, they're immediately thinking about the return of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really what's in the immediate context here as to what's going to happen. And it doesn't really line up with the context, necessarily of Daniel. So in Daniel, when the Son of Man is coming on the clouds, he's not coming on the clouds to earth. He's coming on the clouds to God. And so the Son of Man coming has to do with his ascension and his vindication, the Son of Man's vindication that God is giving to him. And so what that would do is cause you to look forward into this and see Jesus' vindication and his exaltation and ascension to God is going to happen in his death, burial, and resurrection and ascension.
Mm-hmm.
That's all going to happen at the end of the story. And so what I think, basically, this isn't meant to be, now I don't want to lock it down to that moment either, because the Son of Man coming, you know, it's not so much a point in time as a, you know, a duration of time. R.T. France makes this note on it. He says, when the Gospels speak of the Son of Man coming, the presumption must be they are speaking of a heavenly enthronement, the vindication and empowering of the Son of Man after his earthly rejection and suffering, when God will turn the tables on those who thought they had them in their power. The Son of Man coming is thus not a description of a single particular historical event, but evocative language that depicts his eventual vindication and sovereign authority. So that would go from that time of the resurrection and ascension all the way to now. of the Son of Man coming on the clouds to God, his enthronement. And so he's saying, look, until that happens, you're not going to go through all of Israel. So I think that's basically saying, until I'm ascended, you're not going to go through all of Israel. And you see that happening after he sends out the 12. So I think that's kind of what's happening here. So I guess to wrap this up, for me, again, this section really rings true with me of that, this weary and dejected. And so I do want to, encourage you that if you feel that way, you're not alone with that. And just like I know that Jesus is my true shepherd, it's hard to remember that sometimes and to lean into that and to trust and not be anxious about what the future holds for me, I'm trying to lean into my shepherd here. It's okay to feel that way sometimes. And I would encourage you to continue diving into scripture with that. That's what I do. That's what I'm doing. And I'm trying, as I'm trying to work through it. And because I know that ultimately, what's going to be said is, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. God desires to give us rest. And I yearn for that. And I know that kind of my feeling right now with it of being weary and dejected, that will only heighten how good the rest feels whenever I feel that, mm-hmm. And so I long for that. But I also know that God has good for me in that, but I'm trying to trust through that. And so I want to encourage you to do the same. So with that, we will talk to you guys next week. Grace and peace, friends.